Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
No, I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about definitely Knuckles, maybe a little bit of Fallout, but we might be saving that. We were just talking about, we're talking about the only real news was Adam just told me that Craven got bumped to December, which, okay, so I understand moving Craven out of the quote summer movie season because it's not going to do anything, especially after Madam Web. This movie has been delayed. It's been finished for close to a year now.
Yep.
And it's already been delayed at least twice, maybe three times. And now it's getting pushed to December, which I guess, but like that also seems like, I don't know. Like, is there just nothing coming out this December?
I mean, December 13th? I don't know, man. Like, let me actually check the film calendar.
I know that there's I don't know how I didn't know this, but I was looking at the release calendar, like, at work this week, because I was just curious. I saw that there's a Lord of the Rings movie coming out in December. The fuck is nobody talking about this?
Because it's an animated film.
But it's like, still a Lord of the Rings film.
This is true. And done, from what I understand, done by like this is the thing, but it's done by the same people that are doing the, it's not Weta, it's not Peter Jackson.
I mean, yeah,
it's done by the Amazon people. So I feel like
it's like the Battle of Helm's Deep or
Battle for Rokeem.
Yeah.
Like it's the Untold, like basically, like it tells the Helm's Deep story, which is like the war that happened before Lord of the Rings. You know, the one that they're singing about Two Towers.
Yeah, I was gonna say the one that they mention in the original text. So
yes, absolutely. And so like there's that. Sonic 3 opens like a week later. Like, it's going to get mowed down. Like, Sonic 3, like, and we're going to talk about Knuckles, but, like, Sonic 3 and everything that it's supposed to, like all the people that are in it, and just, like, the notion that Sonic 2 did better than Sonic 1, like, and, like there's this groundswell of, like, Sonic fandom within, like, kids and teenagerdom that you can see. It's gonna be a huge hit. I don't think that they like. I think it's gonna be one of those underestimated things, and Paramount understands that, and they're like, okay, good, throw things at us. I know that they kept them. I think that the big thing is that it's gonna be the pour over from November, which Moana 2 is opening up Thanksgiving weekend, which is literally the week before December.
So do you put like? So you move it out of the summer season so that maybe it has a chance, but also you put it, sandwich it in between things that are going to be probably huge. Like,
yeah,
Moana 2, even though it was a surprise, like once they actually ramp up marketing on that, I mean, I don't know. It could not be huge, but the first one was pretty big. So
yeah.
I just feel like it's going to be big, and that's going to carry over. And then, like you said, Sonic 3 is the next weekend. So you have, like, one shot at getting any piece of the box office. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's not, if you're gonna push it again, why not just do what you did with Madam Web? Just drop it in
January 2025. That's my thing.
Which may still happen.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. No one's gonna, like, this is not gonna make any money. Like, this is not a Venom situation where it's a beloved character. Like, that didn't surprise me at all, right? Like,
we know Venom 3 is supposed to be this year. I guess they didn't move that, at least. So
no, it's still October, and it's gonna fight against, supposedly, it's going up against Joker 2 or Joker Ledoux or Joker Doodoo, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Joker, the Scorsese era, part 2. It's supposed to go up against that. But I mean, like, I think that Venom is stupid to do that, because, like, regardless of what I think of, like, what anybody thinks of Joker, that movie made $370 million when it was originally released in the U.S. and then another $800 million outside of the U.S. It made $1.5 billion. Like, it made $1 billion. It will make, with Gaga in it, I know it sounds like I'm not being crass about this. Like, it's literally like there are people that are in love with
the movie. This dude that I work with, like, he's like, I love the first Joker. And I was just like, why? And he couldn't even tell me why. And he just kept talking about how dark it is. And, like, you know, I was like, okay, well, that's why I don't like it. Like, it doesn't, we already talked about this, but anyway, I really, really hope that Joker 2, no offense to anybody involved with it, I like all of those people, except for maybe Todd Phillips, but it's not that I dislike him, it's just that I don't really think he's that good. But I like all the actors involved. I really hope it's a Captain Marvel situation where the first movie made $1 billion and then the second movie does absolutely nothing. So
no cultural impact whatsoever. And it could very well do something like that, right? Like, it could very well, the time has passed, but, like, it doesn't look like it, unfortunately. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be one of those things. Though, I mean, like, we've already put enough juice into this, and I know that we're going to have a conversation in October in regards to it.
They moved Karate Kid, which I actually am I know we've talked about this, but I honestly can't remember. Do you watch Cobra Kai?
No, I don't. Which is, I know, is a point of contention. I have it on my docket, and now I have a little bit more time to get to it. Just so many damn shows, man. Like, it's part of the reason why I'm so delayed on Fallout, is just because I just have so much to do in my personal life that my viewing life, it becomes this weird fucking thing of like what do I watch, right? And what is priority? And like, I don't know, man, like, it's weird and wild. And I know that, like, the benefit of it and what it keeps it in my top three always is that it's a 30-minute show.
This is what I can compare it to, and I think you'll understand, because, like, mm-hmm. I know, like myself, you've struggled with the, like, I need to eat healthy thing. What's your, like, when you ate a lot of candy, what was your candy?
To be honest, it was usually Snickers. Like, Snickers is definitely my jam. It's candy.
That's a good, because that's a great comparison. Cobra Kai is a Snickers bar, where it's like, it's kind of filling, like when you're really hungry, but it's absolutely worthless. It's useless. It does not contribute anything like nutrition to you. Like, There's no real value to it existing other than, like, somebody decided it was a good idea. Like, hey, what if we put all this stuff together and just run with it, you know? It's really stupid. But it's really stupid in a way that's so compelling. Like, it's, I think I've said this before, but, like, it treats, like, these kids taking karate lessons like the fate of the world is on their shoulders. And it's so, like, dramatic. But it is impossible not to buy into it once you start watching it. Like, it is so bingeable. It's ridiculous. Like, once you start, it's just going to be like, oh, I got to see where this goes. It's really dumb, but, like, I'm so interested in this. I think once you start, like, you're not going to be, was it Lay's that used to have the, like, once you start,
yeah, you can't stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And, yeah, no. Okay. So that's what
there's what
is.
Four okay. seasons or five seasons.
Yeah.
And they're not incredibly long. Like, I think they're, mm-hmm. I think the longest one's like 13 episodes. Yeah. Once you start, you're just going to be like, oh, I got to keep watching this. Like, it is literally like candy. But, and then by when you get to the end, you're just like, I know there's one more season coming. It's just like, this is so dumb. But, like, I'm enjoying this so much.
That's great.
I really think you'll like it once you start. Are you interested in this idea of, like, merging these two Karate Kid worlds?
I'm okay. So, like, I am, as long as Jackie and Jaden deliver. Like, I know Jackie is going to deliver. It's Jaden. Like, it's very weird to me that I know why they're doing this. Because, like, the Will Smith apology tour happens to have to be the whole entire goddamn family.
Yeah, now his kids have to be involved.
Yeah. And the whole thing is that Will has had nothing but, like, he is like the LeBron James of stardom, right? Like I don't know if you follow the NBA, but the, like, one of the bigger storylines over the last couple of years has been LeBron wanting to pull a Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. and play with his son, Bronny. Yeah. I feel like Will Smith is the same kind of dude. Like, he's just wanting another person from his family that isn't a piece of shit. Like, I know we all know who I'm talking about, that can play in the cinema world. I mean, we saw it with his terrible M Night, like, a movie so bad that M Night had to go to the low budget world for the betterment, because I feel like M Night has kind of, like, risen from the ashes as a better storyteller after that stupid debacle. But
you could
tell that Will Smith wants nothing more than his son to just be a part of the same world that he is, so, like, he could have something with his son. And I feel like he doesn't understand that Jaden Smith is, like, into everything else but, like, movies, right? Yeah. He's literally a millennial. He's literally a Xennial, right? Like Xennials, we all know, like, they care nothing about movies. They'd rather watch TikTok than watch a movie, right? And that's the factor for me. Like, I know it's all a lot of bullshit to say, like, Jaden Smith, like, if Jaden Smith commits the way that Jackie does, the way that Ralph Macchio does, because, I mean, I've seen the first, like, five episodes of Cobra Kai, and it suffers from what a lot of TV shows suffer from, which is the Game of Thrones world building, the slow world building, which I'm okay with, but it's not what we want in the modern era. Like, I can kind of preview my thoughts about, like, Outlook or Fallout. Not Outlook.
That's funny you say. So I actually had a conversation with my mom yesterday. One of my nephews started taking karate, and is really, really into it. He's six, and like it's been really good for his like mentality, like, and it gives him something to do. And she he has a very short attention span, like most kids do these days. And she was like, I was thinking maybe we could all get together and watch The Karate Kid. And I told her, I said, I don't think he can watch The Karate Kid. She was like, what do you mean? She was like, I don't remember any. I was like, no, that's not, I'm talking about, that movie is incredibly slow for kids. Like, it's just a different time. I was like, he could probably watch the new one with Jaden Smith. He might be a little more interested. I said,
but even that one.
Yeah.
That one is, it is kind of like for the modern era. Like you.
But it at least has a kid, like an, like.
Yes.
You look at Ralph Macchio as a 6-year-old and he looks like, and I know he wasn't. Yeah. I know he was young, but not that young at the time, but he looked so much older compared to like what a 16, 17 year old would look like now. Which is weird to say, but it's just true. And I'm like, he's not going, like, nothing in this is going to grab him. Like, if you watch Cobra Kai, he might be interested, A, because it's short episodes, B, there's actual kids in it that he can kind of identify with, and that's the way I felt about the update of Karate Kid. I was like, he might actually... Like, oh, there's a kid like me, even though Jaden was much older than six. But I was just like, it's different. It's, and she doesn't, I guess she doesn't see that, but she also still watches like all the stuff she used to watch when we were growing up. Like she watches MASH constantly. I'm like, this show is so boring. I know that's blasphemy to people that like MASH, but like, it's. Like, it's not the same thing. Like, when we were kids, like, it was enough, like, knowing that, oh, we're going to get to, like, a couple of little fights. Like, he is growing up watching, like, 5 minutes of something that compressed and given him, like, everything all at once. He's not going to watch this movie. 10 minutes in, he's going to be like, this is boring. I want to watch something else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would probably be more beneficial and like for him, like, and this is where, okay. So like, here's the thing. This is why like YouTube rules is that the attention span is matched and you can be the controller. Like a 6-year-old can be the controller of his own destiny visually. I mean, I know many 6-year-olds, I know it sounds crazy, but I know many 6-year-olds that know how to navigate an iPad better than they do. Like, blocks and all this other shit it's just it intrinsically it's like it's a sad state of affairs that kids don't know how to use like the block thing that we used to do that it bores them because it's just not it's their soft brains are already calcified like it's sad it's really sad like their brains are already calcified because tech has made it that way and it's so limiting but I'm going to say this much, like a 6-year-old will probably go on a deep dive looking at, like, if you say Karate Kid on YouTube, it's not going to get you the movie Karate Kid. It's going to get you clips of kids that have pages that do karate or do the kind of like jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, MMA, like whatever style that your kid is doing. All you have to do is put that name and kid on it. And there's probably pages devoted to like kids that are third degree black belts, 8-year-olds, and doing amazing things. And your kid will go down that rabbit hole because it's a kid doing kid like their age, doing these small videos that give them that bump of adrenaline or that bump of that endorphin bump, and it'll just keep on going and going and going. That's what they'll watch. They won't watch Karate Kid. Like Karate Kid, for better or for worse, this version, it's designed for adults. Like it's adult, like it's a kid's film masquerading around as an adult, like it's an adult film masquerading around as a kid, like as an adult nostalgia bomb. And we're going to talk about something that's kind of nostalgic, and it's the recipe, right? Like we'll get into this in a little bit, but like Knuckles is the recipe that you want for anything kid centric now.
I think Cobra Kai follower like fits in that.
Thing. Yes, like that. That's what everybody has told me. I just haven't, like I said, like the first five episodes are very Game of Thronesy, building a world that I'm kind of already familiar with, and you could have done a shorthand with me, but I understand that this is not for me. This is for the streaming people, right? The audience that streams. And remember, that's why,
by the time you get into season two, like mm-hmm. it is like it's this melding of like, hey, we got like the kids stuff into it and established like the world of the adults. And then they just start piling on all the stuff from the Karate Kid movies. And it's just like, oh my God, this is incredible.
And like I said, I'm not mad at it. Like the thing is that I feel like oftentimes, like I'm excited. Like I'm excited because like who'd have thought like both 40 years and 20 years later respectively that we would be getting a universe of the Karate Kid. Like that's some wild shit that allows me to dive into something, a property that, to be quite honest, I don't know if I've seen the first three Karate Kid, the Machio Karate Kids. I don't know if I've seen them in since maybe the early 2000s, back when DVDs mattered and they were bringing out those massive editions. Like that's the last time I've seen them. And same as the Kid Karate Kid, because I mean, I'm a Jackie fan, so I'm gonna see anything that comes out in the big theater or in the theater with Jackie in it. And that was like prime Jackie era, right? It was like the first old man Jackie that we saw, but not really old man, right? He was probably playing the equivalent, like this 80-year-old motherfucker is like playing the, like at the time he was like probably 65 and he was playing the equivalent of like a 50-year-old or something like that. And he's never not stopped playing a 50-year-old since 2010. Which is crazy to me because it's been 15 years and he's close to I think he's 75. He turned 75 this year or 76 this year. Wow. And he's still doing fucking movies, right? You're still having him in a big ass summer movie next year. Because if you don't think that Jackie is not going to be the center of that advertisement, I think that you would do yourself a great disservice. Like even Columbia, if they didn't promote it with the stars of Cobra Kai and like the younger stars of Cobra Kai and Jackie Chan, like if they don't do that, they're going to miss out because that's the thing. That's the event. But anywho, yeah. I am very excited about it, even though I'm not a devotee to Cobra Kai yet, but again, give it some time. I'll get there. I probably love the show. I know that I'm like, the thing is that people that I trust, including you, have said that, oh yeah, you're going to love it. Like it's the right kind of, it's the kind of smartly written nostalgia that we often don't get.
It is the perfect example of like it, so many studios and people in general, like they want, like we got to give them something familiar, but also new. Like it has to be an established property. Like, and I get it. Like, it's just easier to market it. But so much of that is done so badly. And while this show, like I am telling you, is dumb. Like it's not dumb written. It's just like, it's ridiculous.
But, it's a soap opera. Yeah. It's a soap opera with kung fu in it or with karate in it.
Yeah, but it's so compelling at the same time. It's just, it's how you do this. And, like, I love the fact, like, I know it started on YouTube when they tried to have their own, you know, streaming market, which I really think they just entered the game too soon because at that time it was just like, oh, well, we have Netflix. We're not signing up for anything else. Now you have to have everything. And also calling it YouTube Red when a thing that's called RedTube exists. Yes. Really dumb idea. It was their baby, and I do really like the fact that Netflix stepped in and was like, hey, like, we see the value in this show. Like, and a lot of people, you know, help, like Joanna Robinson, I'm pretty sure, yeah, is a fan. If not, Mallory Rubin as well. Like, people who are also fans of, like, very high regarded things. Like, are like,
we're also fans of, yeah, this.
Like,
yeah,
hey, this, mm-hmm, is a lot of fun. Like, it's not going to, again, like a Snickers bar, it's really not contributing to your nutrition. It's not art. It's not, you know, anything. It might not even stand the test of time. You know, a thousand, yeah, years from now, people will probably still be talking about Star Wars and the fucking Godfather. They're not going to be talking about Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid. And that's fine, but it's really, yeah, really fun. So I'm weirdly excited for the continuation of the Karate Kid universe, which is baffling in a world to say, right? Where we can't, like, Marvel seems to keep dropping the ball as of late, yeah, or just can't cross the, like, successfully cross the finish line. DC can't even get off the fucking ground. Star Wars has become, like, just an absolute mess. Like, all of these established universes, like, can't do anything. But here we are in this specific episode of this podcast talking about the success of a Karate Kid cinematic universe. Because even while the movie may not do gangbusters, I can't imagine it's going to be costly outside of maybe paying Jackie Chan, but I don't feel like he demands that much money. You know, it actually might be more costly to convince Jaden Smith, or to have convinced Jaden Smith to come back and do it. But, like, it might not make $500 million, but I have no doubt that it's going to do enough to
justify more TV shows. No, absolutely. It's one of the, like, so, like, this is the secret thing for Sony, which is that this is their only successful universe that they've created. And the reason why is because they leave it the fuck alone. Because they let the creatives have their way, and eventually they're getting paychecks from Netflix that are belying of what they thought was the successfulness of the show. Like, from what my understanding is that they literally, Sony literally gave it to them at a very cheap price. And then when they saw the numbers and it had to be renegotiated, they got an even bigger check for it. And it justified them making the movie. But, like, unlike the Spider-Man universe that they're trying to create, the extended universe, which is just a flaming hot,
that's another one. It's
shit.
just a hot mess. Like,
yeah,
Venom is successful despite itself, you know?
Well, yeah, like, it's the random outlier. It's truly,
but they're not good. They're not good.
they're like the equivalent of Okay, yeah, they're the equivalent of an Icy. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Icies are so good in the moment that you knock them out. Like, I don't know about you, but I can take down a blueberry Icy or a white cherry Icy in the time it takes
5 minutes later, AMC. I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah. Exactly.
Why did I do that? Like,
I'll take that shit out during the fucking AMC trailers. By the time fucking Nicole Kidman tells me that, you know, this is a place we come to heal, my shit's done. Yeah. And then 20 minutes after that, I'm like, oh man, why did I do that?
Yeah,
like, I'm a sugar
hurts.
Crash.
My hand
now.
Hurts.
Yeah. Like, and that's literally my reaction to Venom, is that I down them. And then afterwards I'm like, why did I do that? That was terrible. Yeah. That was fucking awful. But at the time, it's so good. Because everybody loves trash, right? Like, I mean, and that's trash.
If Tom Hardy's not there, I don't think remotely worth the time. But yeah, like, all of these people so desperately want to start these cinematic universes. And mm-hmm. Feige was very successful, of course, early on, and I mean, arguably still successful, even though people, myself included, have very much crapped on a lot of the recent stuff. But like, it's almost like the—I mean, it's too many people. It's like desperately wanting it, whereas like Karate Kid seemed to like trip and fall backwards into it.
I'm gonna make a very just simple, like, I'm gonna make a very simple, like statement that I feel applies to the best cinematic universes. And this, this is gonna sound so weird because I'm not, I've been on the record of not being a fan of Sonic, but I think that Sonic applies now, which is that the very like the thing that gets you a cinematic universe is the thing that nobody does anymore, which is tell a good fucking story. Tell me an amusing, like at a minimum, an amusing story with characters that have goals that are within the film that matter to them, right? Like, give me actual storytelling. Don't give me a bunch of setups in a season one that are supposed to pay off for season three. Like, to me, that is not storytelling, and that is why universes fail. Like, I will be honest with you, that is the reason why Marvel has suffered, because Kevin has conceded to mythologizing storytelling, and films feel like just an extended piece and not a whole story that's being told. Like, the one thing I can say about each of the first of the nine of the trio, Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor, is that all three of their films, like their three films that they have in their trilogies, their first trilogies, tell a fucking story. They absolutely tell, each one of them has an ABC plot in them. Sometimes there's things that are sprinkled in there, but they tell a fucking story. Right, even the Thor movies that are the like that many consider are the worst of the MCU in that first those first two phases. I'm going to fucking tell you that each one of those has a story to tell. They might be a little murky, but they have stories, and they only show bits of the mythology. Right, and that's my problem with most world building things is that all they want to do is just fucking build a world. They don't want to tell the story. Like, what is the story you're trying to fucking tell? And like, if you can't even give me a basic story, that's why it fails, because all this gobbledygook bullshit like is happening. Oh yeah, wait till Colonel Shush gets the shushy shush, and he will connect it. And yes, like, and it's like something in the background, and you're supposed to know what that means, and like, hold on, but it's not going to happen for four seasons or five movies. The fuck you say? Yeah. The deuce you say? And that's my problem.
I mean, so, I forget who it was, but somebody tweeted out like, yeah, I'm real excited for Deadpool and Wolverine. Let's fucking go. But is this seriously going to be like the 12th Marvel property since Eternals to not address the fact that there's a giant fucking thing like in the ocean that we can't explain? like, oh, we're just gonna ignore that. It's weird how many properties have fallen on their face trying to establish or continue their cinematic universes. But meanwhile, like you mentioned Spider-Man, Sony's extended Spider-Man universe is falling on its face, but yeah, like they had no real faith in the original Spider-Man animated film in the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. And Spider-Verse,
kind of just were like, whatever, y'all go do your thing, and you know, we'll write it off because it's not going to be successful. And then it was, and they basically had to let them do what they wanted to do for the next one. And I mean, remains to be seen when we're going to get the third one. But I mean, it's funny how originally it was March 2024. It's going to happen. We're in April 2024. It didn't happen. We all, like, anybody who knows films was like, it's going to be 2 years before we see that movie. Like,
At a
there's
minimum,
no way.
it's like how complex that movie is. Like, I guarantee you it's not, it's going to be another 5 years. Like, I know that, like, because that staff, that producing staff, will not let Sony fuck around like they do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've
They'll mistreat the
all heard the
animators
room.
for sure, but they're not going to
Yeah.
let the studio fuck with what they want to do. And it's just like, it's so weird because, like, it's this, like, borderline, like, giving people what they want, but also not giving them what they expect. And that's the key to all of it. Because Star Wars started giving fans, quote, fans, what they wanted. And sometimes that's a little successful. The Mandalorian, at, like, when Disney took over Star Wars, and there was this sort of like, you get a movie, you get a movie. Like, a lot of talk about, like, Boba Fett, like, we're going to do a Boba Fett movie. And that morphed into The Mandalorian, which is pretty good. But also, like, now is doing a lot of heavy lifting for, like, the mythology of Star Wars. And the further it gets into that, the less compelling it's become, which is weird because, like, the Bad Batch, which was good to start with, but, like, the more it gets into the lifting of the mythology, it seems like the better it becomes. But it's a very, very hard line to walk. And,
Well, how many
like,
people can, but like, okay, so like, here's the thing. How many fucking people can do clean up the way that Dave Filoni does?
well,
I
no,
mean,
nobody. Like,
nobody, nobody. Like even the people, like, okay, well, actually, the people that have learned under Dave know how to do it, because Dave is only minimally involved with the Bad Batch, and it's the writing staff of the Bad Batch that are making, like, he's overall seeing it, but like, they're doing the heavy lifting, they're doing all of the stuff that makes it seem like it's not like having to pick up JJ's messes, because that's what the Bad Batch has been created for, which is a really sad state of affairs. Like, that to me, like, on paper, like, the Bad Batch was created because they needed, because like my whole crassness of it is, it was created, it was like Dave was allowed to create it because Kathy Kennedy knew that she needed to shovel a big, like a whole bunch of narrative dirt into the fucking hole that JJ made with his title crawl, the Emperor Lives exclamation mark. Like that, like everything that JJ has done is so egregious to me, to Star Wars, and how much he like just left it into a tangled knot of messes. And I've been on record of saying this, but it makes it so much so that any new JJ project that comes out, whatever reboot he decides, because he's rebooting, right? Like that's what he does. Like he hasn't made an original, like he hasn't made anything original since Super 8, which is almost 20 years ago. Like literally almost 20 years ago.
That's insane. And Super 8, while it is an original story, is definitely a pastiche of what
Yeah,
Spielberg was doing
Spielberg.
in the mid 80s.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's literally like if you want to see the snake eating itself, watch Super 8 and then go, "Oh, you know what? I want to watch the first season of Stranger Things." And literally the Duffer Brothers took the exact storyline from Super 8 and basically made it into Stephen King. Like they basically took that and Stephen Kingified it.
I feel like, and not that JJ isn't honest about his influences, But I feel like Stranger Things definitely wears its influences like right on its sleeve.
Oh, yes, it does.
That some people don't necessarily get what the influences are is, you know, that just speaks more to the younger generation than the actual people creating the product. But yeah, I not that Super 8 was dishonest about its influences, but I don't know. To me, Stranger Things, that was the selling point for Stranger Things for me anyway. I was like, oh shit, they're doing like the Goonies, by way of Stephen King, with like, you know, all of these other things thrown in. Like, it was way more effective that way. And we can jump to the Sonic universe since we're talking about universes. I think it speaks volumes that, unless I'm wrong, the last J.J. Abrams movie to come out was in 2019, and it was Rise of Skywalker. He has not done anything since. I'm sure he's produced a lot, but...
Oh, yeah, he has. Know,
but
nothing's
he's
directed.
Not directed anything. And at the end of 2019, we got The Rise of Skywalker, and we have not gotten a fucking Star Wars movie since. That was almost 5 years ago. Meanwhile, in February of 2020, after like having to delay the film because the original design of Sonic the Hedgehog that they debuted was met with again, this fine line of giving the fans what they want, but not what they expect. Like, they redesigned Sonic after their original, like, very upsetting version was debuted online. They redesigned him. February 2020, Sonic the Hedgehog comes out and does better than anyone ever could have fucking expected. Like, and I know there were successful video game adaptations before that, but I really feel like since Sonic 1 came out in 2020, it's become this renaissance of like, oh, we can adapt video game properties to film and television. Yeah. We, in December of this year, we will be on our third Sonic movie in 4 years. Zero fucking Star Wars movies.
Zero. Zero.
Plenty of TV shows. I know. There's plenty on the small screen. Plenty of streaming content. To, like, debatable merit. But it's a film franchise. It's a multi-billion dollar film franchise. We've gotten zero movies in 4 years. We've gotten three fucking Sonic movies by the end of this year in 4 years and one TV show. Like, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's what I find funny is that, like Sonic is the little engine that could a film, right? Like, I feel like people that didn't like this is where video game culture does not like, and video game nostalgia is like a weird thing for Hollywood people, because like if you get outside of film properties, they don't know shit. Like, let's be honest, they're a bunch of fucking morons. They don't know what they're fucking doing, because if they did, they would have already figured out how to make a Pokemon live action movie and not Detective Pikachu starring one of the most recognizable sarcastic voices in the world. It's like making a Garfield movie with Chris Pratt. What the fuck are you doing? You're just trying to guarantee box office and not make a good film, right? Like, Pokemon is a very simple thing. It's a sports movie. Like, it's a sports series. You like, it's so frustrating as a video game fan to see that they take ideas and they just kind of, they do what Hollywood does, which is they love to ruin bullshit. But Sonic in everything that, like it's weird how they got it right. Like, it's very weird. And I also think that that comes from the fact that they really didn't know what they had on their hands. Like, I don't think that Paramount understood. And then when the first one was a hit, they still were kind of baffled by it and were like, you know what, let's give them a little bit more money, but let's leave them alone. And I think that the Paramount is smart enough to allow them to do whatever they want to do. And it's very much so seen in the second Sonic movie because it doubles down on a lot of the stuff that made Sonic work. Like, I'm not going to say that, like, I never said, like, I think we've had this conversation before where it's like, Sonic was not for me, but it was never designed to be for me.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not really, like, it's not something that I would have, like, when I went to see it, like, literally, my best friend, one of my best friends, Courtney, and her kids, like, we had nothing to do. I was like, y'all want to go to the movies? Yeah, what's playing? And I was like, well, that Sonic movie's playing. It's kid-friendly. She had two young kids. And so that was kind of it. And, like, I watched it. I was like, I know that, like, this isn't for me, but, like, I'm having a lot of fun with it. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense if you think about it too much. Like, it's kind of just weird. And, like, none of it makes a lot of sense. You just got to kind of roll with whatever exposition they're telling you. But it doesn't really matter because you're having so much fun with it. It's just like, oh, okay, yeah, he sheds quills and his quills basically are like miniature nuclear weapons. Like, oh, okay, whatever.
And the thing is that, like, so Sonic, like, the first movie, the reason why it works is James Marsden. Like, he really commits. That motherfucker, like, I love him because he's, like, this low-key comedic genius and is just willing to make a fool of himself. All you need to do is watch Hop. Like, Hop is a fucking stupid movie. Like, you can't watch it now because Russell Brand has been canceled not once, not twice, but, like, three or four times with all of his shitty behavior. But if you can get around that and you just don't look at that and don't listen to the little bunny. But Hop is like this weird, like Jerry Lewis style movie. Right. But Sonic makes the right decisions. It makes it so that we get to know Sonic as a character, like what he is like. It's an introduction to Sonic, not the world of Sonic. That's part two. Right. Like, and I feel like, even though they're not for me, there's things that I can appreciate. And I'm not going to say, like, Sonic is a movie that I can rate as a film. Like, it's a 3.5 star film, like out of 5, right? Like, it's like a 7 as a film. It's a film that does everything right to me. Like, but it just doesn't work for me because it's not meant to be. Like, I've seen this movie, like, 35 times. The best being Roger Rabbit. Like, you know, this whole melding, like this buddy comedy kind of sort of road trip, but also solving a mystery, right? But at the end of the day, like for kids, like this is a kids movie, right? And it's designed for kids. Like everything, I can see why it was a hit. Like especially because of not just Sonic, but the way that the live action characters work, and especially Jim Carrey. Like, it's a weird kind of like throwback to like the Ace Ventura, what made us laugh as teen preteens about Jim Carrey, right? Like this is like a reintroduction. Like it's like it's weird. It's almost like if Jerry Lewis had like not lost his shit in the 80s and somebody smart like Zemeckis decided to use him as a comedic villain in one of his movies. That's the kind of comparable that I can give to like what Jim Carrey is doing. Cause it's like, it revitalized his career a little bit as playing exactly what he does. Right. Like there's nothing in this movie in Sonic and Sonic 2 that we haven't seen before, but I feel like it's done so well. And with a comic book property that we hadn't seen, that it was like, it's almost like, whoa, that's his kind of, wow, they did it right, but they got left alone. I feel like that's what the key was, right? Because this all begats Knuckles, which is, like, if you think about, like, what Knuckles is about, it's basically Kingpin or, like, the Big Lebowski or, like, I don't know, like, there's a couple of other films that really are, like, referenced heavy in this, like, Happy Gilmore. It's like this weird buddy comedy, but by way of a sports film or sports TV show. And you don't think it's going to be fun, but Jesus Christ, this is like, it's fun. Like, it's a lot of fun, right? Like, it feels like every bit of the property keeps on getting better. Like, and that's a weird thing to say. Like, Sonic 1 was good. Sonic 2 was even better. But Sonic 3 is like kind of like if you've watched the like 3 hours of Sonic part, like Knuckles is going to be the thing that like as an adult you're going to laugh more and have a better time at than anything before it. But it keeps on getting better. It's like, I don't know, like I don't know few series that get better as they go forward.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to pull off because at this point, I feel like most other properties would have gone full on, like, oh, we got to send Sonic back to like where he came from. We got to see all that work. And we've seen so little of any of that, mm-hmm. like just bits and pieces here and there, that like it kind of it winds up making it more compelling. You know, in a weird way. I know we're talking about Sonic as if it's the Godfather or something like equally important to the history of cinema. And it's not. It's a big, dumb, goofy, stupid property. But the thing, like what you're saying is, the thing is, it shouldn't work. And it does. Like, I think we're both in the same boat of like when the hubbub happened, when they debuted what Sonic would look like originally and fans were just beside themselves and like, I mean, just like, there's no fucking way we're going to see this. Like, this is terrible. You have to do something about it. Like, we were like, this movie's gonna suck. Like, there's no way, like, they don't even know what they're doing. There's no way this is gonna be good. Like, it's gonna be a disaster. And then it wound up not being a fucking disaster. And that's in and of itself a miracle, you know? And not only that, but like, it got a sequel, and the sequel was somehow even better. Like, not only did they get Sonic right this time, but we get the introduction of Tails and Knuckles. And like, it's so weird how well it all works, even though like plot wise, it makes it, again, you just can't think about it. And so here we are, like in 2024, we have a Knuckles streaming series on Paramount Plus, which we start. I got to watch it with my nephews and my sister and her family. And the first thing she said, my sister said, was, why is this a show and not a movie? Like, because they're only like 25 to, I think the longest one is the last one. And it's like almost 40 minutes. She's like, I don't understand why they didn't just make a movie. I was like, well, like, Paramount is very, like, in the streaming wars, I think Paramount is probably dead last. So, despite having Star Trek, it's very, very strange how far behind they are. So they needed something, especially to try to bring in a younger crowd. Sonic has been a huge hit for them. What if we do a Knuckles show? I feel like she was also, why didn't they do a Sonic show? I'm like, well, I also think like Sonic and his relationship to his to James Morrison's character, like that's a key component of a lot of why that works. And for whatever reason, James Marsden was not down. Like, I don't know if it's schedule or pay or what. It doesn't matter. He just wasn't down. So, like,
well,
Knuckles
I also think that it was, like, it was kind of a scheduling thing because he was, when they were making Sonic 3, he was doing, whatchamacallit, the jury show.
Oh, okay.
Last year. That's part of also the reason why he was not, they put him on, like, Tika Sumpner came on and not him, was because I think that it was the scheduling conflict because, like, they were filming at the same time in, I think this show, like, I know it sounds weird, but this show was filmed in England, of all fucking places.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. Like, you know, if you get the right tax breaks, then...
Yeah.
You know, it is
exactly.
You know, it's cheaper to fly the people you have to have over there than to try to film here and not, you know, pay more money just to film.
Absolutely, and it's not like here's the thing is like it's not like it's a cheap show. Like that's the thing is that this show is like
that's like the other thing. I fully expected, I was like, so it's a streaming TV show. They don't have Netflix budget. So I'm like, it's going to feel off. Like the CGI is not going to be as good. But I didn't feel that way. Like I thought all of it kind of worked. Like Knuckles looks fucking great.
Well, so the lead, like, okay, so this is how I know that they spent money is that the lead FX house that was doing Knuckles was ILM.
Oh, okay.
Like, literally, they, like, part of the reason why they did the schedule the way they did, I was reading about it, was that they waited for, they scheduled their filming so that ILM could do the bulk of the work. Even ILM TV is still ILM, right? Or ILM streaming. Because there's different versions of ILM, like there's different houses now for ILM for certain things. Film is different than the guys. Film is very different than like TV and streaming. So they have different divisions, but they had to wait for ILM and they wanted ILM. But then also the other thing was that they Knuckles was the first of the Sonic universe to have to actually have the like a big chunk of their FX house in house. And those people are like transitioned over from Knuckles, the TV series sometime last year over to Sonic 3. And it's all in favor or all in like cost saving because if they schedule their time frames to the time loops that like the empty time loops that ILM has, they get it for a better price. So they got elite FX work for being smart. And it works. Like I feel like they did the smart thing, which is give this thing a healthy budget because it wasn't just that. It's not just the FX work, right? Like the licensing alone for this, not just visually, but also all of the songs that they got. Like, we texted about that. Jesus Christ. Like, there's a song.
Every episode has, like, three, like, pretty, like, good songs. Like, there's always, like, a classic song. Mm-hmm. At least one classic song and one more modern song. I was like, what the hell is the music budget for this episode? Like, even if you're getting it, like, I think they have, like, some kind of music label that Paramount owns. But yes, even if it's something you have like more access to, like that's still crazy to use like this much licensed music, like because you got to pay those people something. So
you absolutely 100%. You have to you had mentioned episode 6's opening. And it's the, like, okay, so if you guys don't want to know spoilers, like, please forward forward on, like, especially like this, because it's kind of a bit of joy when you like, when the action scene that happens in that, and I don't want to ruin the song, but it's like when you get Elton John's Saturday and it's the original recording, it's not a live recording, it's not a re-recording, it is the original recording as your like song for the action beat. That's a lot of fucking money to spend on something that you've already spent a whole bunch of money on, because it's all FX based, right?
And it's so much fun. Like,
yes,
it's not a single song feels like it was stuffed in there because they couldn't get the song that they wanted. It all feels like that's the song that they wanted, and so that's the song that they got. Like, it's such an incredibly fun show. I was honestly surprised how much I wound up enjoying it. And again, towing the line of giving fans what they want, but not what they expect. And I wouldn't even call myself a fan, but like after the trailer, I thought what I was going to see was a show just about Knuckles trying to fit in to like this family life, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of like local adventures. And the first episode feels a lot like that, but this whole side plot of like Wade, played by Adam Pally, like trying to kind of come into his own and realize that, you know, like he is enough, you know, to get like mentally healthy about it. And, you know, like his past is just his past, and he need like accepting it and moving on. And like, it's weirdly like cathartic and like very well done, despite being extremely stupid and goofy. Like, like the whole relationship with his dad, like it's so like quick and weird, and like none of it is makes a whole lot of sense. And like a lot of it's played for really stupid laughs, like being abandoned at a TJ Maxx. Like, I swear to God, they say TJ Maxx 3 times in every episode.
They really do. They really do. Which makes me feel like they're like, what do people in the Pacific Northwest go to? TJ Maxx. And like it's such a like an obvious, stupid, very pandering thing, that it feels like reeks of somebody who like makes 6 figures a year and doesn't understand what the Pacific Northwest deals with and what they have, right? Like that was a stupid thing. Like, I didn't realize it, like, until I started replaying it in my head, how many times TJ Maxx is discussed.
At some point I was like, are they going to get sued? Because the way they talk about TJ Maxx, like, it's not anti TJ Maxx. It's just like, it's very triggering for Wade, because he was abandoned at a TJ. It's like, at some point is TJ Maxx just going to step up and be like, guys, we had like, fine, but like, you like, it's going to make it seem like, oh, we can't go to a TJ Maxx. And so the joke then becomes like, TJ Maxx has really great bargains, but also I can't go to TJ Maxx because my father abandoned me there. It's that kind of like weird stuff. Like the fact that everybody involved in the show kind of just came to play, like including Idris Elba, who just has to do the voice off screen. And I will say that's the one thing I think I feel kind of shows, but I mean that's with almost anything, but like he's supposed to feel stoic, but sometimes he feels a little too stoic,
like stilted, like though I feel like as he goes on he gets better, like the first part, like the first two episodes, it like, and it might be a character affectation that they're going for, it's the whole thing of like it doesn't feel cheeky. Like it doesn't feel like there's a way that I feel like And this was something that I feel like they got right in Sonic 2, which is that without somebody as cheeky as Ben Schwartz to play off of, you like the tone isn't there until the mom episode,
yeah,
the Shabbat dinner is where the first two episodes are kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. Like they're trying to find the tone, but then when the Shabbat dinner happens, I feel like everything coalesces perfectly. And then
I agree. It's the turning point of the show of like, oh, okay. We're it's this absolutely ridiculous thing that we're mm-hmm. going for. Like, I love that they don't spend a lot of time on the like subplot of why these people are trying to track down Knuckles. Because again, I think if you spend too much time on any of that stuff, it starts to lose your brain just hurts trying to think about like what all of it means. It's just like, mm-hmm. This guy is after him because his quills can power, you know, whatever weapon he has.
Yes.
Like, it's kind of the same plot of Sonic, but you know, it really just focuses on like the friendship between Wade and Knuckles. And like a lot of it does become about Wade, but you know, I mean, that's mostly because like, you can't really make it about Knuckles because he is, little fish in a big pond. Like, yep. He doesn't know what he's doing. So it's his reaction to everything that's going on. And you can't go to that well over and over and over and over and over again, because then it's just him constantly reacting to things. And while it's funny when it happens, the more you do it, the less funny it becomes. So he weirdly becomes a side character in his own show. But much in the way that like Jerry becomes the side character of Seinfeld, like
that's a good analogy.
Reacting to everything that's going on around him, and that's what makes it funny, because you're like, oh well, yeah, I know this guy, but it's how this guy is reacting to what this other guy is saying, or experiencing, or you know, and that's the fun of it. That's when it really falls into its own. It's still big, stupid, goofy, but it doesn't matter. Like I said, and everybody came to play. Like the Shabbat dinner episode you're talking about. Like Stockard Channing plays his mom. Like,
yep.
What the fuck?
The thing is that she doesn't need to be a part of this. And even if she did, she could have taken a paycheck and not have shown up. But like Stockard Channing shows up and like delivers like the best mom, like the best TV mom in a long time, because she's so understanding and she's so not what you think that she's going to be. But also like, The other piece that makes this work is somebody we've talked about before, who's a fucking genius, Edie Patterson. Like coming in and like, here's the funny part is she's literally playing her Gemstones character.
Yeah,
but just Jewish and an FBI agent.
Yeah, she's so good at that. I mean, she's good at anything.
Yes.
Like anything I ever said, like she's in Knives Out, right?
Yes.
And like, it's kind of the same character, but not.
Yes.
Like, have you caught up on Resident Alien yet?
No, I have not, but I do know.
Yeah, she's in this season.
She's in it. Yes.
And it's a different character, but kind of the same.
Have you seen she does voices on We Are Bear Bears? Have you ever watched that show?
As a fan of
BoJack Horseman, I'm surprised that you haven't. It's very kind of meta, but in a very different way. And she plays a voice in that, in the movie version of it. But she's fucking, like, anything she does, she's fucking great. And she definitely brings that, that thing that she has, but it's so funny because it makes, like, there's a je ne sais quoi that she has that, like, it doesn't matter what you, like, it doesn't matter what you give her, she's always going to produce something that's within that kind of wheelhouse, but it's going to be just a little bit different. Like I've told people, I compare her, so Parker Posey is like one of my favorite actresses, and especially in the 90s, like her comedic genius is like unrivaled. But I would say that if Parker Posey like and Edie Patterson did something together as sisters, because they're so, their comedic je ne sais quoi is very similar, has very similar energy, I would not be mad at that, because she's that good. She's that good, like Parker Posey in the 90s, but in a very different way. I cannot tell people. All I can do is say, guys, you got to watch, you have to absolutely watch The Righteous Gemstones. And her Judy Gemstone is like the thing that like just steals the show constantly. I mean, when you have a, like when you have like God level comedians like Danny McBride, like leading the charge, and Adam Devine, like just like that show in general, but you have like the standout always is Judy. Like it's always Edie Patterson. Like that's what she kind of does here. Like she just fucking, man, I can't even describe how good she is with just the little bit of madness that she, like the stupid action trope that she takes on of, oh yeah, don't worry, I can, the ghost key, and like, no, I can get out of these cuffs, and then the delivery of the end of it, holy shit. And then can we just talk about, like, how the fuck did they get Cary Elwes? And Cary Elwes to
by filming in England?
Yeah, that's true. It has to be, right? You like, know, it literally, and then just give him the Godfather handshake of, like, how much, however much you want for these two episodes, we will pay you.
He's like, because guys, I have 3 days, 4 days down or whatever. You got me for two. Like, so let's get through this. Because, like, he doesn't have a lot to do except stand around and act like posh British Cary Elwes. And it's so funny because like when he gets introduced at the end in the last few episodes, you actually get to meet him and he's his long lost dad. And you're like, it's Cary Elwes. He's speaking with that British accent, like a very posh British accent, as opposed to like some of his lighter stuff. I mean, it's very much like what we saw in the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare last week.
Literally.
Like it's a lot like that, as opposed to like his Princess Bride. Like it's proper, but like it's not as thick.
It's cheeky.
Yeah.
It's cheeky. Yeah, this one is purposely dense.
Yeah.
And but there's a,
you're just like, this is his dad? His dad is this British guy? But literally, like, in the next, because he's in, like, the last three episodes. Like, the next episode, when Stockard Channing, like, comes face-to-face with him, she's like, and what the hell is up with the British accent? Like, she's like, you're from, like, Toledo or something like that. And it's just like, oh, my God, that's... It's such a small joke, but it was so fucking funny to me.
the even funnier thing is that Elwes is doing, like, basically they stole his role from, like, as Bill, like, he's Bill Murray from Kingpin,
right?
And just he's British. About the same. Yeah, just British. Like, but a fake British, but also a little bit less mean because he's still the father. But like, you know, it's that kind of level of like ego. I mean, because he's like Pistol Pete Whipple is a 27 time champion bowler that we are introduced to. And then here, this fucking made me laugh so hard that I had to pause. Was and it's something that I texted you, which is when the fucking Ocho shows up and Rob Hubel and Paul Scheer show up as announcers for the Ocho. Like, thus tying this the Sonic universe, weirdly enough, to Dodgeball the movie. I was blown away that they actually did the ESPN 8 the Ocho. Like again, giving them the budget to be able to go, hey, Disney, we'd love to like
use the ESPN. It's not, I mean, it could have easily been like, and we're here on CBS Sports, like Saturday, like in the middle of like the off season of football and baseball. Mm-hmm. We've got nothing to show you. Here's some bowling. Like, it would be easy because that they own that, but
yeah,
it's much funnier if it's ESPN 8, you know, like,
yes. And the Ocho, right. But the part that would have, okay. So like, if this was of a movie, you would have gotten Jason Bateman and Gary Cole, right? But I will say this much. Rob Hubel and Paul Scheer, like, I love them both. And so, like, them doing the commentating was, like, literally zenial perfect.
It's so perfect is the right word. it adds so much comedy to it that it's these two guys literally talking about how stupid this is while we're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yep.
But in such a serious tone, you know, like the whole, like, when Adam Pally wins and right after he wins, Knuckles like falls through the thing. And then later, like after the fight, like you see, Carrie Elway's like try to steal the trophy, and they're giving the fucking play by play about the trophy.
Yes.
And then I think it's one of them is like, funny enough, this isn't the first time an alien invasion has wreaked havoc on the tournament. There was, you know, it happened 38 years ago during the tournament of like 1997 or like something like that.
Yes.
And it's like, You know, none of their dialogue was scripted. It's basically just like, here's the scene, run with it. And there's no telling how much footage there is of them two just like, because they're never in a scene really with anybody else. So
they're just like sitting there in a like with a sheet, like a red sheet that says the Ocho on it.
Yeah,
and they're just commentating. Like, it's just a single step. Static shot. And like, talk about like getting tone right. Like, Hubel and Scheer, like, they do the commentating exactly the way they get the Dan Levitard of it all.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like there's this, like, I have this, I think that you probably have the same aversion, like, or the same kind of weird fetishy thing, but I love, like, any TV series or movie about sports announcers or announcers in general that show me the behind the scenes of shit and show me how terrible they fucking are. But just that setting of, like, these two erudite men who know too much about everything but really don't.
Yeah.
I love watching like sports night is like, yeah, like the king of it. Yeah. Right.
I wonder like, is it because like ESPN came about in our lifetime, like,
yes,
and so this is where that thing came from. But even predating ESPN, even though it's not sports related, like, we grew up with the Muppets, and you have like these two grumpy old men like sitting in the audience,
so Waldorf, like, and yes,
Statler and Waldorf, true, like mocking, yeah, what's going, like commenting, telling you what's happening, mocking it at the same time, like this very, it's that tone. And I probably every generation thinks that they invented that, I won't claim that we did. Because it comes from, I mean, honestly, like, it dates back to, like, vaudevillian, like, that kind of comedy. You know, you have the straight man and the goofy man and, like, you know, a color commentator. And, like, it's just so prevalent now. But when it works in this, like, sarcastic way, like, it's just such a good trope. I don't know that I ever get fucking tired of it. Like, I can watch, speaking of stupid things, I'll watch Basketball. Like, I haven't watched it in a while. But, like, the funniest shit in Basketball is that.
No, it really is. It really is that. It's the commentary, like, it's like Loudermilk, or not Loudermilk, but Brockmire, right? Like, watching Brockmire and like the behind the scenes and the shittiness, like, it's hilarious. Like, I don't know why, but it just fucking works. Like, the commentating, like, yeah, like, it's a weirdly, but it's also a very weird, like, okay, so, like, the weirdest part of Knuckles to me is that when you make a buddy comedy, the first instinct to you is to make a bowling thing, which is genius. Like, that tells me how much you love, like, you were trying to make something more than what's, like, you know, like what you were saying, like, you know, it could have just been a stupid thing where they, like, you know, it's all Knuckles centric, right? But they totally don't. And they make it about bowling of all fucking things, but they have all the tropes of what we love in sports movies, including the stupid announcers. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, the level, like, I cannot express to somebody how much this pleases me, because, like, it could have been a lazy show. Like, this is what we're talking, like we're going this deep into this show that tells you how much hard work that the people behind Knuckles went to. They were like, no, it's not good enough that we just make this like a stupid success, like a throwaway thing. We really want to do something special. And their special is like, okay, so what can we do? Let's, like, what's the soundtrack? What's the thing that Wade would be into? Like, and not thinking of it, like, it's so weirdly outside of the box, but so perfect for these characters that you just kind of go, this is worth it. Like, this is the kind of thing that you want, even though it's a kid's show. Like, it's literally it's an adult show masquerading around as an adult or as a kid's show, right? Like, a kid can watch this. They're not going to get the reference, but they're going to get the Looney Tunes of it all. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, like how the, like,
more broad humor. Yeah.
Yeah. The broad humor of it about these two guys commentating is funny to a kid, because why are they commenting about the fight? Right. Like for a kid, they probably have never seen something like this before. Right. And that's funny. But to us, what's funny is the actual commentating itself and the very notion that you have the Ocho there, right? And you have these two announcers. It's like so multi-layered, and you don't normally get that on a spin-off series. Like, I'll be honest with you, the Game of Thrones series, the spin-off series, is exactly what I always expect from a spin-off series. Half-ass writing, half-ass performance, a bigger budget for a while, and then that's it. Like, it doesn't make it's like, oh, it's not like, I know this sounds terrible, but it's like Knuckles is kind of like the Frasier of the Sonic world, if that makes sense.
Yeah
You know,
and like I said earlier, the fact that everybody just came to play, like, you know, I'm sure that I don't know that it's anything anybody would point to and be like, I'm really proud of this, because, like, it's really big, dumb, goofy, stupid, whatever, you know, but it's also not like David Cross and Alvin and the Chipmunks, right?
Like, yes.
Where it's just like, oh God, they're paying me, so I have to be here. Like, everybody just seems like down to play in this universe. And it's so much fucking fun, like, as stupid as it is. And like, I'm not gonna lie, like, we said spoilers, but like,
yeah,
the reveal of like when they have his sister, Wade's sister, and his mom, like, they're holding him hostage up in that room, and his dad flipped on him and like, hey, if you send Knuckles up here, like, we'll let them go, like, very tropey, like, usual stuff. Like, I didn't see the reveal coming.
No, I didn't either. Like, I really didn't.
It was, it made me so happy. I was like, oh, that's great. Oh, and Knuckles has been listening the whole time. Like, oh my God, that's awesome.
And it's like we haven't even talked about the villains and like them being able to get Scott Mascuti, aka Kid Cudi, and Rory McCann. I know that I was shitting on Game of Thrones, but like, and then also fucking Christopher Lloyd, and you have an entire episode.
I was baffled, like, by Christopher Lloyd showing up for 5 minutes
as basically Yoda, like, is, yeah, basically the Sonic's version of Yoda, right? But my favorite part is that he contributes to my favorite moment in this series where they go full on Tommy, like Ken Russell's Tommy, and give us a fucking psychedelic musical about, instead of showing us Knuckles' origin, they give us a musical version of it as Adam Pally as Knuckles.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that was wild. Like, the fact that they didn't do the normal thing with the origin story and just decided to do, let's just do this weird musical thing that's inspired by Tommy and actually have the Tommy music. Like, have, like, and that's the other thing. It's like, how the hell did they get The Who, Elton John? I mean, like, weirdly enough, for our generation, Blink 182, like, all the small, yeah, things. Like, I was like, what? You're okay? It's just, I mean, well, even like, they have like, like, you get annoyed with, like, I got, like, by the sixth episode, I was like, thank God this is only six, because I was about to murder somebody for the Knuckles theme being warrior, but it works. Like, you spent the money on Scandal's warrior, but it works, right? Like, everything works in this like a well-oiled machine. It may be dumb, it may be stupid, it may be inconsequential, but guess what? They get everything right. Like, you know, my, like you said, like you were asking me about, like, you know, like, what was my favorite candy? And, like, you know, Snickers bar, I said, and it's like, going back to that whole analogy, this is like the best Snicker bar you ever had. You will never remember it after a couple of months, but the time that you sat there and you ate that Snicker bar, it was so satisfying and so good and so gooey. That's what Knuckles is. It's just literally empty calories, but it's done like everything in the Sonic universe, unexpectedly elevated by 5 or 6 points. Like, if there's a scale of 20 of like attempts, like, you would think that Sonic would be around a 10, a mid, right? But it's more like a 15, 16, and you're not expecting that extra bump. So it's always fun to go, oh, wow, I would like, that's 3 hours of time that I found enjoyable, like, really enjoyable. Actually, I laughed a bunch and I kept on going episode to episode. I mean, you can't ask for anything more from a series based on a Sega game from the 1990s, where it was like, literally, it's the forefather, the first is the forefather to Temple Run, right? Like, literally, when I saw people starting to play Temple Run, I'm like, oh, it's just Sonic repurposed. What the fuck are they doing? But man, like, they've come out swinging, like it actually matters to them, and I love that. Like, just give me something that you actually care about, and it's not a paycheck. And it definitely feels like this one isn't. It was a paycheck, but it was an elevated paycheck, at least to me. Sure. And it actually got me hyped for Sonic 3. Like, I've not seen the Sonic movies in the theater. I will absolutely be seeing Sonic 3, not just because Keanu is in it. As Shadow Sonic, but I will be seeing it because, like, I'm actually excited. This has made it excited, and it takes place between the two, Sonic 2 and Sonic 3.
Yeah, I'm yeah. It's weird how, like, probably the two movies I'm most excited to see this year are Deadpool and Wolverine and Sonic 3. And I mean, I was excited for Sonic 3 before, so because I've really, really enjoyed them. But yeah, now even more so. I adore Idris. Like, who doesn't love Idris Elba?
Yeah.
But like, I just love that he loves doing this, and it shows. I love that the way he presents the character, like, he's so down with being like aloof and kind of dumb. It's very Draxian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's the like, nothing goes over my head, I would catch it, you know, that kind of thing. And he's just down for it. Like, the way he mispronounces things, the way, like, or misinterprets them, like, it, you know, and also can say really, really goofy things. Like, the show ends with, you know, very much a Splinter at the end of Ninja Turtles, like, I have always liked Cowabunga. You know, like, this yes, is my jam! Like, and ends on, you know, Warrior, which is in every episode because it's the opening song. But yes, it just, if for some reason, it works. Like, he's just so good at that voice. And, I mean, if the rumors are to be believed, like, he, well, I think it's pretty much true that he's a big gamer. But, like, he's he's just, he was like, oh, yeah, no, I want to do this, you know. Like, mm-hmm. I want to play Knuckles, you know, and that he's that into it is just, it's a lot of fun. It makes it more fun that it doesn't feel like somebody's arm being twisted or like, ah, I'm doing it because I got kids. And this is like, oh, no, yeah, Sonic's great, man. And, you know, we talked a lot about universes. And again, like, I know we're in this video game adaptation renaissance, like, it's ridiculous how well they're hitting. I know all of them aren't successful financially, but like, it's been a long time since we saw a truly, truly bad one. Like,
you know, you're absolutely right. Like we can talk a little bit about Fallout because I'm only at the midway point with the show, but I will say this much, like, I know I just talked about world building, but fuck, like, they're making right decisions so far. And the biggest one is Walton Goggins as the ghoul. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, the show understands not just the Fallout world and the tone at which it needs to be done, but, like, they understand TV. Like, they really do.
It's funny that, and I didn't watch it, but by all accounts, like, Westworld wound up just being an absolute failure. But like, and I know like that was Jonathan Nolan's baby, and then now he's on this show with Amazon, and I know it's a collaborative effort, but it's funny how he's kind of taking what he learned with Westworld and not making the same mistakes. It's a phenomenal first season. Westworld, by all accounts, the first season was phenomenal, and then it just got worse and worse and worse. So we'll see, because we're definitely getting a season two, probably a season three as well. But again, it's this fine line of giving the fans what they want, but not what they expect. And so I've never played Fallout, so this whole world is pretty new to me. It wasn't until I finished the show and started like doing some deep dives on like people's thoughts on it that I really understood that this isn't an adaptation. It's actually just a story set in the Fallout universe, playing by more or less the rules that the games have already established.
Yes, and it very much so is.
That's very interesting to do.
Yeah, well, okay, so like as a gamer and knowing like how these things work, like, so the way that the Fallout games work, and you've probably already seen this, is that they take place in certain territories, right? And the fun thing is like my wife was asking me about this as we were watching this. She was like, is this tied to an actual game? And I'm like, yes and no. Because basically what Nolan has gotten is a territory, the new Republic of California's territory, which has not had a game, though it's been referenced in multiple games of the Fallout series. Like, he's getting his chance to be able to play in this world, but has been given a slice of the game that has not been explored so that he can create his own thing within the rules of Fallout. And so, like, all I had to do was basically say, hey, look, this is the setup. This is what happens. This is an alt reality where the 1950s, the Cold War turned hot and destroyed the universe. So everything that's referenced in the series is all anything between, like, you know, pop culture is anything between the 50s into like the early 20s. So like the musical choices are probably going to be like that. And like to a T, they have done nothing but what would have been bangers.
Yeah. It's so weird how they take these like these old songs that are mm-hmm. like sweet and are sad or kind of funny and jaunty, and like almost every single time it makes them horrifying in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, like, okay, so, like, in the first, I think it's the first, they do a Shawshank reference via music, and it's the same fucking tone that Shawshank brings, which is the creepy, the music that's just a little, like, it's the actual song, I can't remember the song's name, but that song is so terrifyingly like sinister of like now, but like it's the only way that you could reference it, but it's so beautiful, right? Like the way that they reference that, but get an extra added layer of like Shawshank, but that music that they use, like it's so perfect to like get under your skin. But also like just the it works wonderfully well, like with the conventions of like fandom and tropes, like the ghoul and his like relationship with the vault, and how like in the 50s, the big thing was like the American transition from the cowboy to the astronaut and spaceman as the future that led it into the 60s. And I mean, we've seen it in Toy Story. It's very like, it's very kiddie. I like acclimated to that, but I love watching this whole thing of like spaceman, but like the rejection of the spaceman, because like at the end of it, like the ghoul is with like, the ghoul is the ultimate, like Clint Eastwood cowboy, right? Like he's the renegade. He's the guy that like lives by the rules of the land and has survived everything.
So you've seen a little bit of his backstory.
Yes.
So it's also, so there's also this thing of like, I think they said it when they announced the show, like, hey, one of the things you're going to see in this show is an origin story for the kid with the thumb. Like, I forget what he's called in the Fallout world, but whatever he's called, Fallout Boy. I know that's
Nuke Boy. I think he's called Nuke Boy.
Nuke Boy. I know you can't call him Fallout Boy. So yeah, like, and that seems like a really stupid idea. Like, you're gonna give us an origin story for that? Like, that's your idea for the show? Like, okay, this is gonna be dumb, but whatever. Here's some money. Like. And they do, and it fucking works. Like, it's so sad.
It really is. Like, he's a, like, So like even in the small things that I've seen, there's so much manipulation going on of Cooper Howard, aka the Ghoul, that it's fascinating to me. Like I can see it already.
It's interesting, right? Like because when you see him as an actual man, it's hard to imagine that this guy becomes that guy, because like
he goes from
like such a nice dude,
like Gary Cooper nice, right? Like this guy that's he's like a cowboy. Like the first scene that you see is him shooting a TV show where he's supposed to shoot the guy, and he goes and he makes the like, perfect I don't wanna do point. It. He's like, why? He's like, I'm a sheriff. Shouldn't I just arrest him?
Yeah.
And then the funnier part about that is, like, the whole communist, a.k.a. Pinko thing comes up, and he goes, well, you know, you're like, it's a different America now. You got to shoot him. And he goes, well, that doesn't seem fair or right. And it's so wild, like, just the small, like, from the opening. This is how you know that you're involved with a Nolan and Lisa Joy. Like, I cannot stress enough his writing partner and life partner, Lisa Joy, is a co-writer, co-conspirator in this. He has said as much that, like, you know, Lisa Joy is basically his Emma Thomas. And anybody who doesn't talk about Emma Thomas at the same time that they talk about Christopher Nolan, they're not doing it right, because she is just as much of a collaborator as anybody else, if not more so. But anywho, like the Nolan-ness of it, like the creepy, like I'm already showing you that the fingernails are going underneath his skin for puppetry, is like, it's brilliant. Like it's that kind of level that you hope that something like this will achieve, but often doesn't. But in this era that we're in now, as we move forward, where Twisted Metal can be a TV series that is both super of its origins, but has expanded out to a way where it's like, you know, this post-apocalyptic world that's kind of like Mad Max and has a lot of detail and grit to it is something that we want to revisit, and it's actually really good. Like, that's fucking wild, right? Like that game was just about roaming and destruction. The same way with, like, Fallout is very different. But it has this weird smartassy tone, like, you know, and it's also hyper violent. It has a story, but it has an FPS story, you know, first person shooter story. There's not a lot there. They put a lot there now in this, like, but it also has the conventions of the game, and it has like the knights, and it has these the vault dwellers, and it has the ghouls. It has everything, like even down to the weaponry. Like they have it pretty right in the attitude, but it's a TV show. It's a real TV. It's like it's telling a story, right? Like I'm hooked on this, on these three different stories for these three different characters that represent literally the three different like kind of cultures of Fallout throughout the series that you've been introduced to. I find it a very bold way of telling a story, because it's not just a story, but it's actually commenting on stories, but it's also commenting on pop culture in a way that's funny, because it has distance, right?
Yeah.
Like it's telling something about 50s culture, which is actually automatically about 2020s culture, but yeah,
weirdly
it's
enough.
Distant enough. Yeah, it's distance enough to where the dummies won't recognize it, but the smarts will get it and will understand it. Like, I find it, so far, I find it wonderful and unexpected. Yeah. Like, I literally don't know where it's going from moment to moment, though I have an idea. It's smart enough to just kind of take me on this journey. I mean, so much so that, like, there's a moment, I think it's episode 2, or maybe it's episode 3, where the ghoul stabs the dog. I think it's episode 2. He stabs the fucking dog. And at that point, like, you stab a dog, for me, it's like, fuck y'all. Like, you wanted me here? Now you've just done the worst thing that you could possibly do, kill a dog. But the thing is, he doesn't kill the dog, does he?
Nope.
And it's a very complex moment where these two end up having a relationship, which you don't like. You, it's an unexpected relationship. Even so much that the ghoul doesn't care about the dog. It's not my dog. He's just following me. You know, it's great. Like, but it's that kind of unexpectedness. It's like, what's her name? The girl, her brother and her brother's storyline. Like, I can't fucking wait for that. This little evil genius is going to take these vault dwellers. He, like, the way he looks at those vault dwellers, like, these motherfuckers, these idiots, yeah, they're fighting over control and they're not doing what we need them. They think that they can deprogram these post-apocalyptic assholes that just ripped apart our country. And they picked the perfect three people to play these fucking vault dwelling dunces that are like, don't see the stupidity of it. Talk about some like really like the take that they're taking on it is very interesting. And I want to see, like, I'm very much into it. So I'll report back about the ending. But it seems like the ending, like the end of the series delivers for you.
Yeah, I think it does. It seems like that's a pretty common opinion. I think you're right. The one thing people aren't talking enough about is probably Lisa Joy. People that are in the know, sure, but, like, she's phenomenal. Like, you can go back and watch. She started on Pushing Daisies.
Yes, she did.
She was in the writing room there, and she has like three credited episodes. But it has that kind of sensibility. Like, it's very dark and serious, but also has this like goofy, like weird, funny kind of sarcastic tone to it. It's this perfect mixture of things. And I keep saying it, but again, it's giving the fans what they want, but not what they expect. And the ghoul is the perfect example of that. How many episodes did you say you watched?
Four. I finished the ghouls and, I'm going to start the past.
Okay.
Which is, so this is
The third episode has one of my favorite moments in it, and it's very small, and I know a lot of people have referenced it, but that's when the ghoul and the girl, I forget her name, meet. And it's all about finding the head he's very fed up with her, but like also he has to, like, he needs her to find what he needs. And there's this moment where she's like, what about the golden rule? Like, and he's like, yeah, well, the wasteland's got its own golden rule. That's how it gets sidetracked by bullshit every damn time. And I'm like, that's the fucking game, right? Like, yep, it's a lot of games. That's mostly why I don't play games like that. Because, again, I've had Spider-Man 2. When did I get my PS5? In February? I've had that game for almost 3 months. I still have not gotten to the end of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, so like I'm working on Zero Dawn Horizon, the second one, which is very similar to Fallout, though it doesn't have the cheekiness and the hyper violence of it. But it's very similar, right? I'm like, to give you an example, like I'm probably about 5 missions away from finishing the game, which in this game is probably about 10 hours away. Do you know how many hours I've put in just because of side quests and fucking just bullshit? Yeah. 50 hours, because I'm just enjoying it. Like, I'm enjoying going on these side missions and side hustles. And like, you are right. Like, that is like the best gamer-esque, like meta commentary on things.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny because they are on a side quest. Like, all three of them are on the same side quest, right? Or the ghoul, like Ella, I think is her name, and the knight, was his name? I can never remember his name. Good Lord. Maximus. Why don't I remember that?
Yeah, like, should be easy.
It should be easy.
His story wound up being oddly the most compelling to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I was not into it from the jump. I was like, this is just weird. This, like, Brotherhood of Steel or whatever. And it just seems so, like, I know that the point is that it's so, like, machismo. Like, it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you get to, like, probably 5 or 6, like, I was like, I'm more invested in his story and, like, what all of this means for him than I am for anybody. Her story, and the ghoul story is certainly heartbreaking and interesting to see how that guy became this guy. But, like, his story to me winds up being the most compelling. It'd be interesting to see what you think. And
okay,
I it's also weird that a show like this has so many storylines, like, and I know, like, three major ones seems like not that much of a big deal, but, you know, you usually don't have a new show that starts out with a focus on, like, three different characters, you know.
No,
like, it's a juggling act, and it does it really, really well. Especially by the time you get to the end, and again, not to bring Seinfeld back into this, but Seinfeld was a show that was really, really good by the end of taking, like, these four characters having four different stories that wind up intersecting in a fun, funny, unique way. And mm-hmm. this show does that. Like, you have these three main characters, and the way their stories, like, weave in and out of each other and ultimately come together at the end to give you, like, a conclusion, but also a to be continued, more or less. It's really, really well done. It's so weird to me we're living in this, like, I mean, not 5 years ago, it was just like, yeah, they can't adapt video games into TV shows and movies. They just can't do it. It's just impossible. And here we are, like, in the last 5 years, the last 4 years, really, it's become, like, such a, they make it seem easy now. It's like, oh yeah, of course, you know, and I mean, we'll get back. I have no doubt that we're going to get to the point, much like the comic book stuff, where it's just like, Jesus, enough with the video game adaptations, guys. But for right now, I'm really, really, I'm enjoying the video game movies and TV shows more than I am the comic book stuff. And that's mind blowing to me, because I'm much more of a comic guy than I am a gamer guy.
No, absolutely. And I'm very excited to see where this series goes, and I will report back and we will have a talk about the ending. But you are right. Like, we are in this weird, heady place where, like, this is the point that I like. I like it being here, where we are getting the possibility of greatness. We haven't gotten to the apex. We haven't gotten to the downward slide. And I think that a lot of people have already, like, said that comic books have already peaked, right? Like, Endgame was apex, and we're down on the downward slide. I don't think that that's real. I don't think that we're done. We have a bump to go higher in the apex. I just think we're in a lull. We're in a, like, a dip, and we're going on to another rise. But the video game stuff, this is the first rise, like, in quality, right? Like, the first true, we're going to get shit done. It's not that difficult, because, like, if we really look at it, like, and this will be my closing thoughts, is that we are at a point where showrunners and creatives that have control and power are now the people that played video games and loved video games the same way that Martin Scorsese, Quentin Tarantino, George Lucas, and Steven Spielberg loved movies during their childhood. And so we're getting people that are like next level good about how to translate that into story. And they are like the Martin Scorsese's, the George Lucas's. They're just, they just come of age. Like, I feel like the inflection point for all of this was Scott Pilgrim, was Edgar Wright's Scott Pilgrim, because it's a very weirdly convexy kind of movie.
Yeah, where it kind of like all of these different aspects of things kind of just like, you have the comic book, the game, the music, like, and also cinema, like all convexing and just like creating this unique story, which was completely unsuccessful. It was successful as a movie.
No, you are absolutely right. At the box office, it made nothing. It literally ruined, like, Edgar Wright. Like, I feel like it's also part of the reason why Ant-Man didn't happen, even though we don't want, like, nobody wants to say it.
Scott Pilgrim's a huge success. Marvel probably is way more like, we can give we'll give you a little, we can be a little more lenient.
Yeah,
but that movie bombs, and it's just like, okay, do you like it, whether you think it's a good movie or not, like oh well, can you create something that's appealing to a mass audience? Because that's what we have to have. Like, it can't be niche. Like, it has to hit a mass audience and be successful. And, you know, arguably, Edgar Wright cannot do that.
Nope.
Like, Baby Driver was pretty successful, but, like, you know, he's kind of niche. So, yeah, it's interesting. And it's also had me thinking a lot about, so before he passed away, Roger Ebert, there was this, he made some statement about video games can never be considered art. And it was polarizing.
Yeah.
So a lot of people argued to his point, against his point. Like, it's still something that's debatable. Like, can video games actually be considered art? But to everybody's point, like, against what Ebert said, like, we're seeing, like, The Last of Us is artistic. Like, it just is. And, like, the fact that they adapted it the way they did, and it's successful artistically the way it is, like, speaks to the game itself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, part of me thinks that, like, the success of all of this doesn't necessarily stem from that conversation, but, like, it definitely, that conversation definitely, like, led into, like, oh, like, can this actually be done? And I mean, here we are, like, just in the middle of this, and it's so much fun. And I mean, even the bad ones, quote bad ones, are just way more enjoyable than something from, you know, 10 years ago, like the fucking Prince of Persia. It's crazy. Like, you go back and watch Street Fighter and, like, Double Dragon, and it's like, they're so terrible. Like,
they really are. Like, I mean, like, even something like as bad as, like Halo is not great, but it's better than Rampage. It's better than, like, you know, Warcraft. It's better than all of the Tomb Raiders, or even, like, it's weird because it's like, there's still random outliers, but that's what happens, you know, in this kind of era where we are, where it's starting to get elevated, right? Like, you're going to get an Uncharted but you're also going to get a Mortal Kombat, and both of them are bad, but one of them is highly watchable, highly fun, and the other one is Uncharted.
Well, that's the thing is, like, so Sonic is arguably, like, narratively an absolute fucking mess. Like, yeah. Knuckles, the TV show, narratively is, like, it just, a lot of it just doesn't make any sense. But you're not supposed to really think about it. The thing about Uncharted is, like, you just set out to make a clone of, like, adventure stuff. You didn't do anything. It's got to be fun. Like, it's got to be fun. Otherwise, it's just like, okay, well, I could have watched fucking somebody playing the video game on YouTube and gotten the same experience. Like, what is the damn point? You know?
Yeah.
Sonic is fun. You know? Like, Mortal Kombat is fun. And it's not even that Uncharted is terrible. It's that it's just not fun. It contributes nothing. Like, there's no reason to watch it. Like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, it's the exact same story as the game. Like, okay. Well, the game is fun to play. It's not fun to watch somebody play. So.
Absolutely not. And, like, there's nothing. Okay, so there's no, like, narrative built. There's no fun. There's no nothing. Like, it's just, like, the one thing I can say about Super Mario Brothers, which is something that we both agreed was not for us, but it was well made. And that's the thing, is that it's well made. It has a lot going on. It's telling a story. But the main point is that it's a lot of fun, right? Like in the middle of it, I was having fun. It's a lot of, like, mishigosh, but, like, Sonic, it's fun. Like, it doesn't, like, but that's the thing, is that you have to, like, tell something entertainingly, and not this whole thing of, like, markers, right? I have to say this point, I have to make this point, which I feel like Uncharted and the worst of them, like Tomb Raider, are all about, like, oh, well, we have to make sure that this is in this, because the video game fans will not like it if that's not in there. And it's like, to be perfectly fucking honest, like, tell a good story before. Like, here's the thing. Fallout doesn't have any of the characters from the other Fallout games, doesn't have any of the same locations as the Fallout games, doesn't even have the similar tone. It's going for something different. It still has some of the tropes, but what it does is it takes that world and absolutely creates the world of Fallout and makes it compelling. Like, that's the thing, is that it's compelling. Like, I'm watching this going, yeah, like, I can see the dots. It's like the analogy is the Warcraft movie, like that $300 million movie that no one went to go see, even though they were, like, we were told that there are literally 100 million people that played Warcraft. And it's like, none of them showed up. Why? Because if you watch that movie, it's boring. Like, yeah, it has all the characters in it, and it has all the allegiances, and it has all the correct movements of magic and, like, warcrafting and whatever the hell it is. But it doesn't, there's no stakes, there's no consequence, there's nothing. It doesn't feel like anything that a movie should be, right? Like, it doesn't feel like a Lord of the Rings by way of, like, Star Wars, which is what I've been told that's what that is. And it just sits there inert, like all of this beautiful stuff, but like, even like Detective Pikachu, it's like, why did you decide to tell that story? Why? Like, it is so just not interesting to anybody. Like, people,
because
want
they couldn't
to
figure out how to do it any other way that wasn't animated.
But you can still okay, like, here's the thing. Like, my pitch for Pokemon is, I'm like, it's the Karate Kid. It literally is the Karate Kid, or Rocky, or Dodgeball. It's any of those sports movies. Fucking hell, even Kingpin. It's a road movie. It's The Color of Money. Like, you know, that's literally what it is, where Tom Cruise is Ash, and Paul Newman is Pikachu. And they go and hustle until they get to the big leagues. and they meet a bunch of friends and a bunch of enemies along the way. How fucking hard is that? And you make it an angsty teen thing with a boy and his dog. Like, that's like his dog that's a fucking amazing, like, combatter, right? Like, how hard is that? Like, it's literally like you take the Harry Potter-ness of it all, and instead of it, like, you know, like, it being about Voldemort, it's about the, what's the game that they play? Quidditch. It's about Quidditch. That's it. That's all you have to do. But you can't. You have to make a Detective Pikachu movie about, I don't even know, finding his identity. Like, it's so fucking stupid. Like, people gussy up stuff for no reason whatsoever. But then, also, you have, like, things like Rampage, right? Like, where, why the fuck do you make that? Why do you make that? Like, when you have a Godzillaverse out there, are you trying to compete with it? I mean, it's made by Warner Brothers. Like, it's like, to write, try to read the tea leaves of why development happens is so fucking weird, and so just, like, it uncovers, it strips the fact that some of these people are morons and shouldn't be making decisions. Like, very clear, right? Like, whoever was the person that greenlit Detective Pikachu should have been fired and their bonuses stripped from them. Why? Because it did nothing. And now you're in a corner where, what, you're going to make Detective Pikachu 2?
Yeah.
Because that's what you set the world in. And I'm not even a Pokemon fan. And I know this, right?
Yeah.
It's a wild thing where I feel like people are going to continue to go down the hole that they are, but then the true elites, it's going to just rise and rise. It's going to be the Marvel conundrum, right? Like, yeah. Marvel does everything right, and everybody else does nothing right. And they continue to make the same mistakes, and all they see is money. So, like, Sonic, the people that behind Sonic probably see the money, but they care about making a good quote-unquote Sonic movie, which is wild to say. I mean, right?
Even if it's more just about, like, okay, y'all clearly know how to do it, so can you just do it, and then we'll put our name on it, and then we'll all make a little bit of money, because we clearly don't know what the fuck we're doing. So, where Sony can't do that. Like, somebody has to have their hands in something. So just in case it's a huge success, they can be like, yeah, that was me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's not a lot of people who can do that. Feige had the hottest hand in Hollywood for a long time. And, like, now that's really not the case, you know? Like, it's hard to... I mean, you're not always going to have a hot hand. Somebody or some group of people have to be involved so they can be like, yeah, look at us, rather than just being like, hey, we don't know what the fuck we're doing. You seem to know what you're doing. Can you do this? But what's funny is that's exactly how Feige got his hot hand, you know, was like, showing up and just being knowledgeable, and somebody looking at him and being like, well, it seems like you know what you're doing. The people at Marvel literally watching him on X-Men and then more so in Spider-Man, just being like, well, you seem to have a passion for this and know, like, what you're doing and what direction it should go in. Like, come over here. Like, let's do our own thing. And he did. And it worked. So, like, yeah, it's, I guess it's like being micromanaged to death, you know?
Yep, it is.
And
because everybody wants a piece.
Yeah, the ones who aren't being micromanaged to death, like, it seems to work out better. So, anyway, if you didn't watch Knuckles and we ruined it for you, oh, well, you should have watched Knuckles. There's still no reason not to watch Knuckles. It's a lot of fun. So, and also Fallout, a lot of fun. Adam's almost halfway through it. So, I'm trying to think of anything else I've watched. Oh, I started playing some Spider-Man 2 last night, and I put Velma on as like a just a little background noise. So Max dropped all of Velma season 2, which we briefly texted about this, but it just, I think we, when they announced it, we're like, this had to have already been finished, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that they dropped all the episodes at once, like, speaks to, like, yeah, they already had it. They were like, well, I guess we got it. We got it. We might as well just dump season 2 once, you know, like, the time has come for it. Yeah. So.
Which kind of, like, it sucks, but at the same time, like that just speaks to Warner Brothers, right? And their malarkey. Like, they just literally, they sit there, and this is the kind of bullshit that they perpetrate against people, against creatives. Like, literally, like, I just sit there and I go, what? Wait. Like, I saw it on my feed and I was like, huh? And then I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, new episode. And then I looked inside of there and it was all the episodes. I was like, what? You have all the episodes here. Like, really? Like, that's what your, that was your big plan. Like, something that you actually spent, like, this is the thing, they spent money on this. They spent a lot of good money, because the creative talent and the voice talent are not cheap.
Yeah, it's a lot of people who's, I mean, we talked about with season 1, a lot of people's names, you're just like, oh, this person, and like, you know, everybody involved in the show. It's just fucking terrible. Like, and I don't, like, I wanted something on while I'm just like swinging through the streets of New York, beating up bad guys that I'm like, not going to really give a shit about. I was like, oh, well, this was on, it's on my, like, a for to-do you list. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just put, I made it about 5 episodes in before I got tired and turned the game off. But yeah, it's actually worse than season 2.
Oh, man, that's terrible.
I mean, season 1, I mean. You think maybe it's either the 4th or 5th episode becomes this, like, Breakfast Club thing. Like, they spend so much time pointing out that they're doing the Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, yeah.
Like, I was like, so many shows have done this, and I'm not against, like, it's a show set in a high school. It seems logical that you would do some kind of Breakfast Club knockoff, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's just stupid. It's really, really stupid. So, the only other thing I'm not enough into it to really talk about it, is I did start watching The Bear, and
when I get caught up, I have
3 episodes in.
Okay.
It's a really tough watch for me.
Yes. Oh, no. Okay. Like, so this is Anxiety Watch 2020 for me. Like so much so that it just, like, it's not even like, for me, it's like, I've never worked in food industry, but even then, it's just the level of toxicity that's there that they're showing. And like, all of the stuff with the suicide and the darker elements of things, like, it's a tough watch. Like, it is a tough watch. Like, I'm not gonna deny that. But I'm very intrigued to what you have to say about the show. I'm not watching anything. I mean, I'm not watching anything that I haven't watched before. Like, I'm still trying to keep up with everything. You know, Abbott. I figure that we're not going to start. We won't talk about that show again until the end of the season, which is fairly quickly coming up. I mean, it continues to be a bright light in everything that, like, you know, in TV, like, and it's so ironic that it is literally old fashioned TV that you have to, like, if you want to watch it right away, you have to watch it live on ABC with commercials, right? Like, that's weird to me that this show is like of cultural relevance and space that it takes up. Like, I mean, it has fucking Bradley Cooper showing up on it. Academy Award nominated actor and filmmaker Bradley Cooper showing up. I mean, like, to me, that's like wild. Like, that a TV show is like a conventional TV show, a conventional vertical TV show is doing this, but that just shows you the power of it. So, you know, I am watching that. I, So like I started, and this is something that I was going to talk to you about offline. Have you heard of Giancarlo Esposito's newest show? And have you taken a peek at it?
I haven't watched any of it. It's on my radar.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't got around to it.
So. Okay. So it's something that like, okay, I'm not talking about The Gentleman, which he's in, like he's in a big part of that. No, I'm talking about Parrish.
Right.
I would really, really like you to watch it and see what you think. Because it was based on a TV show that I'd seen before. It's a BBC TV show. I won't tell you. I'll let you either search out for it or not search out for it. But I've watched two episodes just on my own, and literally they've hooked me. Like it's something like you said, like background noise, right? And it, like I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot and see. Like if you are a fan of Esposito, this is the show to watch. This is like uncut Esposito. And all the time. It's really interesting because I don't like, I hope this takes off to a point to where I would love to see, this is the reason why we don't get the Gus spinoff that everybody wants, because I don't know if I really want a Gus spinoff. Like, you know, and for people that don't know who Gus is, you got to watch Breaking Bad. You got to watch Better Call Saul, guys. Yeah. It's very interesting so far. So I'll leave you with that, like a little mystery of it all. But, you know, I'm watching the usual stuff. I haven't watched The Bad Batch, the newest episode of The Bad Batch yet. But I mean, like, you know, I just haven't had the space. But like, you know, a space to deep dive into things because I'm, you know, working and. Like you know, movieowl.com. Like, you know, reviews do not sit in rest. So I have to, like, you know, this stuff is all like predetermined and it's all weird and stuff. I'm sorry, guys. Like, we didn't have full on conversations about shit that's out there. But you know, this is the side hustle for all of us. Like I always find it. Like, do you ever find yourself like looking at other shows and going, Jesus Christ, how do they like? I often forget that Mallory and Joanna get paid a good amount of money to just sit there and watch.
Yeah. I mean, if we could podcast twice a day about a lot of stuff. If you know, we got paid.
Yeah.
A side hustle implies that there's money involved. I don't think you're supposed to lose money on side hustles.
No, we're not.
So anyway, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. Although there isn't much right now, it's mostly just this show. All my co-hosts are in various stages of like, I don't have time, which I understand. So, and then if you want to check out my writing, you can go to Adam's website.
Yes. And, there is something coming up next week. Another Moving Pictures that's going to post. We've already talked about the Back to the Future 2. That's currently the piece of writing that's being spotlighted for Logan. Again, like I've been writing like a madman for the site. Just new home video releases, like of course boutique label. But then I actually did get out to watch a couple of movies for review. Challengers, which I'll let you read my review. I am not as praise effusive as everybody on the internet.
It doesn't look like anything I'd be remotely interested in.
I you know who I'm actually very interested in knowing who their opinion of this movie? Spencer. Very interested in this because I feel like like a weird bit of thing is that Scott hasn't seen it yet, but we're kind of similar mind. And when he heard my review, when he read my review, he was like, I don't know if I want to see this because it's not what I was expecting. Like, and then he was like, I'm not a Luca fan. Like, I'm not a huge Luca fan. And then, but then I often think about about Spencer, and Spencer is totally a Luca fan, like a real big Luca fan. And I'm just very curious about what he's going to think of it, because this is the kind of movie that's designed for him, right? Like if there was a sports movie, which we both know he's not a big, like, I don't think he's a big fan of sports films. Like sports,
not really. He's not a sports guy.
Yeah. But I feel like if there was a sports movie, it's this movie. So I'd be very curious to see what he has to say. Like oftentimes when it's too for me, I often like look at other people and like, okay, so whose taste is this like? And I wonder if they would see a completely different movie than me. And this one was definitely like, I'm very curious about Spencer's Letterboxd review of this once he actually gets to see it. That's the kind of film that it is. And it's not to say that Lucas films don't work for me. Bones and All is a great film. Like his last film, I really loved that one. This one is dead. But a movie I did like, Boy Kills World, which is awesome.
I'm interested in checking that out at some point.
And especially, I think that like it's designed for people that listen to our show because it has H. John Benjamin in a very big voice role.
That's the thing I'm most excited for is like that running commentary of like, and it's his voice on a guy who like does not look anything like H. John Benjamin, doesn't look like that voice would come out of his mouth. I'm really, really stoked to check that out. So hopefully I won't see it in theaters, but when it hits streaming, hopefully I can catch up to it pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, because it's a bomb, like it really did not hit.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really sad about that. It's going to probably be available in a couple of weeks, so we can have like a side conversation about that when it comes up. And of course, you know, the movie that's designed for me to love, Fall Guy, is coming out this week. So if the funniest part is like, you know, I love that you mentioned that your other co-hosts are like having problems with scheduling. Like even we're having problems scheduling because life has come up, right? So like we haven't talked about it on the show. Normally we kind of talk about this stuff, but it's kind of funny that we've had to shift our conversations or our recording to different time frames, but we're all going to make it happen. And I think that I'm really like, that looks like a summer film to me. Like, and maybe that makes me look like the 46 years, almost 47, like, no, you know, years
I
old. Mean,
I feel like it's 45. Definitely like, and with, when we lack anything Marvel, like other than Deadpool 3 coming out, like,
yeah,
it's kind, I know it's a known, quote, known property, but like, you know, it's kind of fun that something that isn't like traditionally what we've had the last decade or decade plus is going to start off the summer movie season. So it's not a big franchise film. Like it just, it's just, looks it's a like movie a fun.
It's two great looking, it's two amazing performers, beautiful performers that happen to be very adept at comedy and action in a big action movie that isn't a Marvel movie.
Yeah. So yeah, like, it looks like our next discussion will definitely be about the Fall Guy. The Fall Guy, whether it's next weekend or the weekend after. So yeah, look forward to that. I'm excited to see that movie. So go check out all that stuff, Adam's website, xwingfiles.com. We'll be back soon. Maybe not next week, but soon, talking about soon-ish. I keep saying the Fallout guy. The Fall Guy.
We have Fallout.
Yeah.
And then we also have the Fall Guy. And like, you know, I mean, isn't that a great title for Fallout Boys?
Yeah.
Like you know, biopic.
We're grown up. We're the Fallout Guys. So yeah, we'll see you guys then. Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now.